Guys, Games, and Beer.
Live from the 6th floor basement of the Guys, Games, and Beer Towers. It's the castest with the mostest.
Oh, God.
What was that?
10 years. 10 years. I'm running out of crap to say, really.
12 years, Rob.
It's Guys, Games, and Beer.
Yay!
And today we're doing the interview format, which means I'm going to introduce myself for once. I'm Rob with Guys, Games, and Beer.
It's Tom with Guys, Games, and Beer.
And Tyler with Guys, Games, and Beer.
And guess who we're with?
He's coming. My name is Eric Onerheim. I'm the developer of Excalibur.js, the friendly open source TypeScript game engine for the web.
That is correct. And we met you at 2DCon.
That's right. It was our first year there, so we did a booth showing off some of the games that we've made. So the goal of Excalibur is to really make it available and easy for folks to build games. So we're working on that, like, as our primary goal. So we spent a lot of time, like, number one, focusing on documentation. And then we have a familiar mental model of development. It's very similar to like Unity or Godot. So if you like that kind of development, it'll be kind of right at home. But we were showing off some of the things that are high fidelity samples at 2DCon. We showed off a math puzzle game called Some Monsters. And you can find all of these at excalibur.js.com. Some Monsters is a math puzzle game. It's kind of like Sudoku with addition. So you have to add up the rows and columns to match the appropriate sum to solve the puzzle. And it's got kind of a dungeon motif, so it's kind of fun. So we're hoping to get that one out. So that's open source, so you can go and steal that code if you want, but we're gonna go ahead and publish that for free in Steam in the next year. And then we showed off another one, which is a match 3+ type game, excalibur.js.com/sweep. If you want to play it, it works on your phone, super addictive. You've been warned. The goal is to click and drag, match three or more of the same color. Diagonals are okay. And then it's an endurance game. So you just keep going until you can't go no more. You're trying to keep tiles from getting to the top. So it's kind of like a weird reverse Tetris. Yeah, and then we have kind of a 2D platformer where one of our friends dialed in the Super Mario World physics, like by recording Super Mario World and going frame by frame to like nail the inertia in the jump. We showed is excalibur.js.com/sample-jelly-jumper. But we'll send you all the links, but they're all linked to from the main website, so if you get to excalibur.js.com, you'll see them. But all of the code that we have out there is open source, so you're free to go and take a look at it and seal it if you want. So like a good thing you could do is grab that platformer example and yank the art out of it and build your own platformer. And it's using a popular like 2D level editor called Tiled under the hood, so you can just do level editing in that and export the map format, and you know, Bob's your uncle, and you're off to the races making games.
All right.
So
let's talk a little bit about that part. So I'm kind of I love game development systems. Let's talk a little bit about using TypeScript and JS for your engine. Mm-hmm. This is a very novel approach from my point of view. What was the thought process behind deciding to use JavaScript with TypeScript as the front end on that? What was your thinking on that?
Okay, so this happened over 10 years ago.
Oh, but, okay.
I was voluntold to, so this is how it happened. I was voluntold to give a presentation at work about TypeScript. TypeScript had just come out, so it was like the 0.8.2 or something, and it was still hosted on CodePlex at the time. So Microsoft had just announced it. And my boss was like, hey, this is a great opportunity. You're going to give a talk about TypeScript. I'm like, I am. So I am. So I was like, okay, well, you know, what would be fun to talk about? Like, like the kind of the capabilities of the TypeScript type system. How, you know, so I just made like a, I made a platformer in TypeScript, and that eventually evolved into Excalibur. So really one of the things that motivates like using web technology over like anything else is what nowadays, like the web one, you can run JavaScript anywhere, whether you should or shouldn't. and so you can run a game anywhere, you can run JavaScript.
Which is everywhere. Which is everywhere still.
Yeah, which is basically everywhere these days. So for example, we're gonna go to Steam and mobile, and we don't really have to change our code at all. We just wrap it in, for Steam, we wrap it in a technology called Electron, which is like what a lot of, like Slack, for example, is built that way, and Teams is built that way. If you've had the displeasure, Discord, which we're on right now, is built that way. It's using an Electron wrapper. So it looks like a native app, but it isn't. And then on the mobile side, we're using something called Capacitor, which is the same idea, which wraps up a browser in like a native shell. So that's how we're getting to those platforms. And then we have something in the works right now to figure out how to do console development. So famously, consoles don't want to run JavaScript. So we're working on something to make it work.
Well, so you got to that a little bit before I was going to ask that question, because, yeah, there is a... Well, no, because these games lend themselves... The games you have out already lend themselves perfectly to console gaming. So I was curious to wonder if you had something in the works for that. So you actually have a package that you're looking at that will allow you to convert these to console games?
Yeah, so the idea is it's a lot of C code, but the idea is that users will be able to use just their Excalibur code as they've written it for the web, and it'll mostly work on a console. There's some limitations, but it'll mostly work. And it involves me writing like just enough of a browser that it runs in a console. But not too much of a browser that I've written a browser. there's a line of thread there.
But that opens up, like I said, these games lend themselves very, very nicely to retro console gaming. When I say retro console, retro games on modern consoles, because again, it is, you do have to have, the, like you said, that kind of a browser running in the background. So that actually works out really well. That is, I'm really glad to hear you're thinking along those lines and moving it in that direction, because I can see these games like this are very popular on modern consoles.
On the Switch.
Thank you. Everything's on the Switch. That's the number one to develop for, but because everything comes out on the bleeding Switch.
Especially for 2D stuff, that's our number one is going to be the Nintendo Switch.
Perfect.
Mike wants to know what you're smoking.
What am I smoking?
No, what am I smoking?
Yeah.
Oh.
2.4, Mike.
I've
views.
Been accused of that before.
Well, yeah, well, that's pretty much, yeah, every day with the G2B gang. So, all right, so let's get back down to, again, this is not, yes, you have games available, but what the base of this is you've developed a gaming engine like Unity along those lines that lends itself better for 2D games.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the features that I can look forward to in the development system?
Yeah, so this is a great question. We're really trying to do batteries included. So with that, we made maybe the foolish decision to not take on any dependencies in the core engine.
Ooh,
so
nice.
Anything that's a dependency is like a plugin. So we support Tiled and we support LBDK and we support Asprite, but they are as plugins. So the core of Excalibur has, you know, like I said, it's very similar API to Unity or Godot. Very much kind of a convergent evolution. I wasn't like looking at Unity and like, okay, let's port Unity's API to this. There are plenty of differences. But conceptually, it's going to be very similar in that there's a scene where you have actors running around, and actors are what are drawn to the screen. And you can switch out scenes to simulate different levels. And when you're switching between scenes, you get transitions. So we have transitions out of the box, so you can fade in, fade out, you know, screenshot the one and crossfade, you know, cool stuff like that. We built two physics systems by ourselves. So we have an arcade system, which is like 99% of the time what you want, which is like you're doing your top-down games and you just want stuff to not pass through each other. Or you're doing a platformer, you know, same deal. Very, you know, very box standard type stuff. And then we have a realistic physics engine, which is very similar to like Box 2D. And that's also implemented, we implemented that ourselves. So that's like, if you want like a physics game, like I'm thinking like Angry Birds, you know, where you're having things stacked up and things are knocking down. So that's that kind of game. We have spent a lot of time on making it just do the right thing, like without you needing to think about it. For example, we just added a new pixel art flag, which pixel art is surprisingly hard to get right in rendering. So we have just a pixel art flag. You can say, you know, pixel art true, and it'll just do the right thing. And there's like a bajillion rendering settings.
Okay, that's freaking awesome.
Yeah.
Because you're
right. You know, like the naive way is like anti-aliasing false, but then you get all this weird shimmering artifact because you're getting like sub-pixel anti-aliasing. Like, it's not great.
All right, I'm sorry. I'm kind of.
Yes.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
I was.
I'm sorry. I was getting. You know me. I will delve down way deeper than I need to. My apologies.
Oh no, Aaron. I can hear you. But just fine.
I'll talk about it all day.
Yeah. Thank you.
If you're really deeply curious, I have a YouTube channel. It's just my name. And, you know, youtube.com/EricOnerheim, and I have like a 2-hour video.
Oh, nice. Okay.
A talk I gave at the Independent Developers Association here in the Twin Cities. If you're interested in like the very deep dive, I go into it, and I throw in a lot of humor too. So hopefully it's an enjoyable watch.
All right. Well, that is good to know, because again, otherwise I'm just going to sit here and I will just keep going down this rabbit hole forever. Rob, what do you want to know?
I was gonna go into the suggestions for people. Now you've been working on this for a decade.
Yep.
So there's some lessons that have to have been learned. So. How about some top lessons for those who want to develop? Because there's actually I know of a number of like virtual consoles and things like that that are you know, either their own programming language or an attempt to actually make like a, say, an 8-bit console or something like that. What would you say were the hardest parts?
Okay, I have a couple like meat space ones, and I have a couple of technical ones. So the biggest thing. If you are a project and you want people to use your software, make documentation. That is the most important thing. Your project could suck, but if you have documentation, people will use it. You could have the best code on earth. It could be sublime, passed down from the gods. If no one knows how to use it, no one's going to. So you build it, they will come. It doesn't work that way. And I've never found that to be the truth in my day job. Like, if I build something, people aren't going to use it just because I built it. So you really need to socialize that and build that documentation so that people know how to use your thing. So that's meat space one, or maybe technical. I don't know. It's halfway in between. The other one that I have is you really need to set a culture from the top down. So community is a garden. And like a garden, it needs to be encouraged in directions and weeded. So if you got someone that's being negative and toxic, you know, just ban them. You know, I'm so quick with the ban hammer. So, it's you know, like, and you know, I haven't had to use it very often. Like, I can count on like two hands the times I've had to use it. So it hasn't been a lot. It's just important to set friendly, like, our big thing is making friendly games. Like, we're all here to make video games, let's do that, and let's make it friendly and fun. So that's kind of where we're coming at. So culture is set from top down. So if you're going to start a project, set your culture in your community and be guards of that. This one I resisted for a long time. So this piece of advice, start a Discord. I resisted for so long. And turns out it was a great idea. And I don't know why I resisted so hard. I think I was just nervous about having people talk to me.
Yeah, that's Discord. You never know.
Yeah, you don't.
And then the technical one I have is do not succumb to the temptation to rewrite everything. Don't do it.
I take it you tried that.
I tried a couple times and I'm like, you know what? There's like, if I were to do it, I would undo like 5 years of bug fixes and like weird edge cases that I've already fixed. So then you just get to fix those bugs again. So that's what rewrites are. There's a lot more risk in a rewrite than I think a lot of people think. So I've tried a couple times and I'm just like, you know what? It's just better to slowly evolve an API towards what you want. Yeah, I think those are my pieces of advice.
Those are all good advice. So your discussion group is actually really good, and I can see where the weeding comes in handy there. Going through so this is something you guys have a really good and active discussion group going for this, which is outside of Discord. It's a separate thing. I like what you've done with your discussion group. It's everything seems to be quite pertinent to what's going on. I found a lot of useful information already, and I haven't even started using your software yet. So if you're interested in getting into it, a lot of good explanations in there, a lot of people's trials and tribulations in there. Found that really quite handy right off the bat.
No, it's really helped us figure out what people are trying to do and like where like the gaps in our like communication, either like is this API poorly designed, like such that it's confusing? Or is this a documentation thing? Or, you know, what is the nugget of like truth under like a struggle? And so we take a lot of time trying to like noodle on that. So sometimes I overanalyze a little bit too much. I'm like, oh, should we do something completely different here? I'm like, oh, I think this might be a documentation fix, which is the lowest effort fix that we can do versus like changing an API.
No, sometimes it is just a matter of explaining things a little bit differently, where it'll do what they want it to do, they're just not understanding what the procedures that they need to go through. So, like you said, if you just do a documentation fix, they'll figure it out without you, like you said, having to rewrite the API, which is always a joy.
Oh, yeah. What's been really cool is for a good long while now, we've been pretty stable in terms of like API churn and in terms of like bugs. Like we don't really find any like this is a showstopper bug. I have over 1,500 unit tests.
Wow.
Which is, it saved my bacon a couple of times.
Wow.
Every bug I fix, there's a unit test for it. So. When you fix a bug, add a unit test, because then that bug can't break the same way again, which is always rough when you have a regression. But yeah.
All right, I'm sorry, I'm going down rabbit holes again. Rob.
No, I was just looking at some people who had done building. There's a guy, Drew Conley, who's talking about building games with it.
Drew and I are buds.
Oh really? Yeah, he's got a
interesting
video on that. I'm trying not to pay attention to it right now. I'm trying to just, like, whiz by.
All right. So let's talk about, Rob, what did you see at 2DCon that kind of set this all off, that you saw that just was the dazzler there?
You don't see actually a lot of engines and programming languages. Usually I'm, like, the only one who really even brings virtual consoles or things like that to it. To convention. So you don't actually see a lot of development. You see a lot of developers, but you don't see a lot of development engines.
Right, no.
That's kind of unusual.
This is, I think, the first we've seen at a show in all our time out at shows. I can't
tell you, like I said, we like I said, we brought the VCs before.
Right, but that's you doing something.
But that's us doing something for somebody who wasn't there.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's kind of interesting seeing that as well. I was kind of interested in the portability. I'm a big fan of the more the merrier as far as platforms go. I've never been a big fan of, hey, this only came out on this console and that. So
yeah.
So I like things to be very cross-platform. I also like, I am a big 8 to 16-bit gaming fan. I love small games. I just love little games that just kind of have a mechanic that they ground down to perfection. When they just take like one or two mechanics and they sit there and they grind at it until it's absolutely polished. And I love that crap. So that's my thing.
Yeah.
That's what drew me to it.
Awesome. Yeah. Like it was definitely weird because like we're like, yeah, we're showing off the games that we're making. Cause so like we have a games company, like where we're going to be publishing games and like offering like support, you know, like open source company. So we're trying to be, you know, trying to increase the ability for people to make games. And we have a lot of folks out there that know JavaScript. We have a lot of things that can run JavaScript. So we're like, okay, let's make this the most open we can. So everything is BSD2 clause. So, you know, you can go and steal our code, fork it. we're not going to change the license on folks. The editor will also be free and open source. So it'll be, we'll have like a pay what you want, you know, and you could pay zero, that's okay too. The part where we're gonna try to make money is the console publishing. So very similar to like W4 Games with Godot. It's very much how we're trying to model our business.
Well, and that makes great sense because there's, again, you're in a very saturated market when it comes to that style game, but the console people will always buy. The PC people, you know, you'll get thrown in bundles here and there, and you make pennies on the dollar. But if you can get the console market, I, again, love the idea of, again, especially the Switch, ported over to that, having that ability would be freaking awesome. All right, so your model, your business model here, so what, I mean, you put some time into this, so releasing it open source.
Mm-hmm.
What was the thought behind that?
Well, you know, it was always open source, so it started that way. And for a long time, it was just kind of a thing that I did for fun. And that was, and if it, I used it to make my own games. And if that was all it ever was, that would be fine. But we started growing and people started finding it. I'm like, oh, this is, okay, I want people to make games. Like, and I want it to be open. Like, for, at the time where we started, everything was paid. And it was expensive. Like, you know, different game development tools out there. This is not the case now. But at the time, it was like there was a huge paywall up front to get into games development. And a huge knowledge gap to overcome to get into games development. So we really wanted to end that. Like, I was like, oh, I really want people who are students who don't have a lot of funds to be able to make games. And that was like the driving factor, and it still is. Like, we want people to be able to make games. So, like, putting up a paywall in front of that is completely antithetical to like what we want to do. You know, like, and a lot of the popular game engines now are kind of following suit, right? Like Unity, you can use for free up to a point with lots of strings attached. Same with Unreal. You know, there's, you know, you can use for free, you can learn, and then there's strings attached if you make money, which I think is great. I think that's a perfectly fine business model if you're upfront about it. But we're not going to do like that. We're going to be like, it's free, always will be, and we're going to offer, you know, we're going to offer premium support, we're going to offer custom development, we're going to offer publishing.
All right, well, so you brought up something here. So you did this originally, again, because you wanted to develop games. So I'm going to ask you two questions on that. All right, so what was the... So you've got quite an offering already in the Excalibur.js platform. What was your favorite... what is your number one? What is it? Is it the all-time favorite for everybody, or is it just yours? But give me the number one.
The number one game?
Yeah, what's the number one game?
Sweep is probably, like, it's probably number one. So, Sweepstacks was just lightning, and, like, it was, it just, we made a game, and it worked so well, and we didn't even try. Or we didn't even, like, know what we were doing. Like, we did try. We tried really hard. We didn't know what we were doing. And we just kind of fell out. We prototyped it on a checkerboard with poker chips. And that's how we prototyped it. And then we were like, I think we got something here. And we just kept going with it. And we're like, this is fun.
Okay.
So, you know it's a good thing, like, when you get distracted and you start playing your game instead of actually developing it. Like we would get distracted. We'd catch ourselves playing instead of working on it.
So okay.
We were like, I think we got something. And one of our friends, like, I told this story at 2DCon a few times, but one of our friends at the time had a Windows phone, and we found a memory leak in that Windows phone that crashed it. But only after playing Sweepstacks for 4 hours. We've since fixed the memory leak. But this person played for 4 hours in bed.
Wow.
Not going to sleep. So I thought that was really funny. So I think that one we got, we did that originally for Ludum Dare, which is a game jam. And I think that was Ludum Dare 32, something like that. And we got 70-something place, which was, we've never been in the top 100 since. So,
wow.
So I was ecstatic. So,
all right.
And then the close second was Some Monsters, which also had that quality where I got distracted. And we got 134th place.
Again, anytime you go in yours. Okay, so that's yours. So, from the community, what's the number one that you've seen or that you think is...
Ooh. Oh, there's a lot of cool ones.
I know. That's why I figured I'd ask you. You're the developer.
You know, a lot of people are doing lots of cool projects. Like Mookie on our Discord is doing, like, wave function collapse, kind of like Caves of Cud style terrain generation. It hasn't, like crystallized into a game yet, but it's really cool.
A lot of potential
there. It's doing like really neat stuff where you're doing multi-pass of wave function collapse to generate like unique terrain. It's really neat stuff. And he's written a few articles about it, so definitely like check those out. And another person made a Vampire Survivors clone.
Oh, really?
Good. It's like, and this person was really stretching like the performance, and so like this release that's coming up is gonna have like just a ton of performance improvements because they really so.
But that's kind of cool when somebody actually takes the core that you developed, and it kind of kicks it to the limits of what it can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's so cool. Like, I'm blown away about the things that people have made. Like, there's a whole bunch of lighting systems that are being played with too, like where they're like doing like kind of the really stark shadow casting kind of stuff, the raycast based shadows. Really neat stuff. We have a lot of Mega Man fans in our Discord too, so I've seen a lot of Mega Man fan creations.
Nice. So, and that's the other thing. This goes back down to, again, when the engine works well, you get an active community like this. But that's also documentation, as you talked about earlier. When I can actually use what you've produced without guessing what you were trying to do. And you can look at examples of code. It helps. But documentation makes all the difference in the world when it comes to that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what I'm kind of curious about is you, obviously... I liked what you had said about community, like how it's really important in generating, like a garden is a great analogy for that. But I am a gamer. I am not a developer. I have never tried or even looked into actual doing development or something. And I think what you're saying is really cool. With that documentation, how difficult would it be for someone just starting to jump into this?
Yeah, so I think, so I've talked about this with a few people. We have like four personas right now. And there's one, which is the Excalibur expert, which I think there's about 8 of those in the world. So it's not very valuable to target those people. We have the web developer. So someone who does JavaScript for their day job, you know, they know what they know. They're very familiar with web development. And I think we serve those people best. So they know how to use JavaScript. They know how to set up JavaScript and get going on there. Then there's the normal programmer, which I've split programmers into two. Web development is such a wild beast. It's gotten way more complicated than it used to be. Where you just like had an HTML and slapped a script on the page. And it can be that simple. Like you can make Excalibur games that are that simple. Like that's, I have a vanilla template that is that. So you don't need any bundlers or any fancy stuff. But then it's the normal programmer, which is a little tougher because there's a lot of, you know, web idiosyncrasies to get over. And then there's the code newbie, which is the person I wanna help the most, and we don't help the most yet. So that's part of the reason why we're building that editor, so you can click and drag and then drop into like code where you need to, and that would be JavaScript or TypeScript. I have a video that I have tried to finish, but it's gonna be, you know, how to set up your development environment for JavaScript and then how to build Flappy Bird.
That's actually great. That's a great idea to do. I've always found that there's a lot that's taken for granted when you're developing. I've got some basics, but I mean, most of my work's always been for, you know, basically, you know, the server environment. So when you get into gaming, there's some concepts there that I don't actually necessarily have. I don't have to call in anything when I'm writing a script. So there's a lot of things. I've done like some basic animation now. That's about as far as I've gotten. But that was actually pretty hard for me because I'm not used to having to call things in. You know? I don't know, you're calling this module?
Because we all work in IT on this end here. Obviously, it's not like from our early conversation you had also. But like, I'm just a sysadmin. I do no development of any kind. The most I do is I write a PowerShell script, you know, automate something. And like, some very, and honestly, my shit's basic. So, like, I feel like this, anytime I hear people talk about development, I feel like it is a crazy jump. Like, do I even have the time to try this? So it's really,
I 100% think you're capable. Like, everyone is capable, I think. It's, I 100% think it's possible. And, like, especially with PowerShell. Like, PowerShell is very close to JavaScript already.
Well, and again, where you're right, everybody can do it. I do like the idea of a drag and drop. So I'm old as fudge. So a lot of my game development was on really early systems. But when systems actually started getting kind of to that the point where you could do drag and drop, so there were systems like AMOS for the Amiga and things like that that we did game development on, and a lot of those were very drag and drop. It just makes life easier for, I don't want to say the non-programmer, because you still had to have the basic, at least basic knowledge. But somebody who wants to get their toes wet and see if it's for them. And Tyler, you'd be the perfect example of that. Somebody who loves gaming, maybe has an idea that he wants to try out. Drag and drop just makes that much easier. I mean, there's still some back end that you have to do.
You can try the 5-minute tutorial that's on their site.
I did. It's an exceptionally good tutorial, a 5-minute tutorial. It's nice to have that. So my early computers were all ML programming, so it was, you know, the early days of computing. It's nice for non-programmers and non-developers to be able to play around with ideas. And again, you're going back to your discussion groups, there's a lot of good examples in there as far as how to do things, which I love as well.
You know, my advice, too, for playing around with ideas is not to even program or touch, like, an editor. And, like, the cheapest way to iterate is going to be, like, paper prototyping, where, like, you whip out that chessboard and the checkers, and you prototype your game. You know, you just do, you move it around like the rules of your game in your head, or you cut out paper dolls and you do the same thing. But you're able to iterate really quickly and like find the fun before you commit to the long and arduous effort of writing code.
I like that.
Or even just pushing and dragging around in the editor.
You know, that's something that makes complete sense to me. Like, the way I learn and think, like, having the physicality of it sometimes makes it easier to, like, plan things out. Even, like, again, with PowerShell script, I'm like, oh, wait, no, this is in the wrong order. That's not going to work.
You know, Some Monsters, the math game, we prototyped that in Excel. So, So Excel is a great prototyping tool.
Who knew?
Or Google Sheets, if you prefer.
Thank you.
LibreOffice, that's okay too. But like anything you have access to is great. Excalibur, which I have personal beef with, I can tell you the story later. But Excalibur is great for also for doing prototyping. It's great.
All right, Rob. What do you want to? Have we covered everything, Rob?
I believe we have.
All right.
Sorry, I just had a horribly distracting screen pop up on me.
Rob is doing all sorts of things in the background here.
Yeah, I was looking at the website.
That we won't talk about.
I'm the worst.
So Eric, again, if people are interested in finding out more about Excalibur.js, where should they go?
Yeah, so definitely check out the website, excaliburjs.com. We're working on video courses, and if you want to know when those come out, karate chop. Excaliburjs.tv. You can sign up, put in your email. I won't sell it, I promise. And I will send you no more than one email a month when we have new stuff.
All right.
So if you want to do that, and if you want to hire us, we are caliburn.games.
All right.
And
let's jump
out there.
Don't jump too far on that yet. So by hire us, what do you mean?
Oh, so we offer professional support, so either video support or, chat support. We also offer custom development projects, so if you need, like, us to come in and build something for you, or you have a project that you have that you want to do in Excalibur specifically, it's completely custom. So, like, it can be building a game, it can be finishing your game, publishing your game, you know, debugging, you know, you need extra help, anything like that, design work, CI/CD.
So if I was some marketing department and I wanted to develop a game for, let's say, a new beer I've got coming out, you could do that for them, couldn't you?
Yep. The only thing I would say is you got to provide the assets and we could do the rest.
So, all right.
For a price.
That also brings the thing. So we've talked to you. How many people are actively working on this project?
So it's about 2.5 people.
Wait a minute. 2.5?
Which half?
Yeah. One person's got their own side project going on.
Okay.
Yeah, so like I got half of their attention. But I have roughly at any given time, I have 2.5 people working as core maintainers. So I have recently promoted from the community. I have two from the community that have commit access. So people I have not met in person. So there's Mookie, which I talked about. He's doing the wave function collapse. And Matt Jennings, who's done a ton of cool stuff. Just a ton. He's done that Mega Man fan game. And he was the one that dialed in the Jelly Jumper jump. Absolutely powerhouse. So he also has commit access. And then I do, and then a few of my other friends that I do know in person have commit access as well. But at any given time, there's about 2.5 people that are active.
All right. So again, if you are a corporation looking for somebody to write a custom game for your marketing, maybe check these guys out. All right. Anything else you want to bring up before we wrap this up? Eric?
Actually, I do have one thing. Now, I know a lot of people are scared off because our version is 0.29.3 right now, but we are very close to the version 1 of Excalibur. The API is not going to change very much between now and V1. So if you wanted to get started, go ahead. And we do everything in our power to make the, any kind of migration a very smooth process. So, but V1 is happening soon.
All right. One more quick question. So again, talking about going, I'm going to jump back to the councils one more time. What type of time frame are you thinking on that?
So I really, really want it at the end of this year.
Okay.
We'll see.
All right. That's soon.
So, like I've said to a lot of people, I want it to be done in 2024. Like, it's not going to be done, but like, I want to be one. I want to put a flag in the sand, or a line in the sand. I want to plant a flag on this planet and say, well, okay, we got to be one. And we're going to follow Semper. I mean, we already do follow Semper, but we're going to be very strict about Semper, and we're going to not break the API as best we can.
It's always best. What's the next game jam you're going to be at?
Well, we always do LD once a year, so we'll always do that. And we tend to do the winter one because winters suck. it gets cold and it's rainy, so we usually do things like in the April timeframe where it's still pretty slushy out here. So we're usually doing that one, but we've been known to do more. If I had more time, I would have done the GMDK jam, which is pretty cool. Can recommend those folks. They're really doing some cool stuff. Definitely game jams are a great way to sharpen your axe. And it applies creative constraints to you. So like, if you're a person that's like, hey, I want to get into game development, a game jam is a great way to do it, because if you carve off time, you're like, okay, I'm going to go at a completely unsustainable pace for the next 3 days and produce a game in 3 days and have maybe questionable amounts of sleep. But you really do learn a lot, in that short amount of time. And that's been like the greatest teacher, I think, for us, at least, as we're building it. Like, we do one every year. So we make at least one game a year, and we really do get to feel any sharp edge. So.
Awesome. And if you, those of you out there, listening, if you're ever looking for, if you want some deep cuts in gaming, like want to do something, you want to see some original games, check out some of these game jams. It's a great place to like really find some unusual games. I think I agree with you that but I've been off of these for a while, now I'm right back on. I'm right back on. I used to pick up games at game jams all the time and check them out and do them on the channel. I'm gonna have to do that. I think that the limitations make people often just make some awesomely creative stuff, and it's definitely worth checking out a game jam. Even if you're just a gamer, there's really cool stuff there, and some of the stuff you might see, they might take that and blow it up to a larger game eventually, and you get to say, I checked that out when it was just a little weenie.
We've done a few of those.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, yeah. No, a ton of games are coming out that way.
All right. Yep. Eric, thank you for your time tonight. Rob, why don't you take us out of this mess?
All right, this episode, as always, has been brought to you by Lionheart Racing. Lionheart Racing, all the joys of racing without the rubber hot dogs. If you want to check them out, get some real racing going, you can go to www.guysgamesandbeer.net. Take a look at that big old red 77 on the side. It's huge.
It is huge. It's huge.
It's as big as my head. It's big. I'm just saying. You can check out some racing, and we've got...
Hey Rob, what do we have coming up?
We don't have announcements yet for that. We might have something coming up though.
No, we got something coming up.
With that.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, you go ahead.
All right. So hey, if you're going to be in the Pittsburgh area, we are going to be at PGX in about 2 weeks now. PGX is the Pittsburgh Festival of Independent. I'm sorry, Pittsburgh. Gaming
you
Expo.
You beefed it, didn't you?
I did. I did beefed it. I was thinking East Coast. So this is our first time out there. We are going to be bringing out the full Steel Battalion network. 10 rigs of Steel Battalion all set up and ready to play. We'll be doing some live broadcasting from there.
Freshly greased.
Rob spent the weekend greasing Steel Battalion rings. But we will be bringing out the Steel Battalion rings. We're going to be doing some live broadcasting from there. We are going to be doing a live beer court from there with somebody they've partnered with for this show, and I can't remember the name of the brewery. I'm sorry right now. It's a local brewery, but they've made an Oktoberfest, and you know I like my Oktoberfest. So we'll be doing that live on the show, as well as some interviews out there. Make sure to check us out. And again, if you're in the Pittsburgh area, stop by, say hi, have a beer with us. Always a good time.
Awesome. One last thing I've got to mention, of course, you can visit us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/guysgamesandbeer. You can check out the dankest of memes. God, it feels weird saying dank at 50.
Yeah.
The dankest of memes by Master Memetology Dallas. Don't do it at work.
Trust me, don't do it at work.
He is a rough man, and he's given me nightmares before with his memes. But you got to see him. It's like Cthulhu. You see it, but you can't describe it.
That's right. And there's some things you can't unsee.
There are. All right, folks, we'll see you next week, same time.
Beer court next week.
Oh, yeah, next week we're going to be there with beer court. I think Larry will be sobered up.
No, Larry's not here next week.
Oh, he's not here next week.
Nope.
He's got to go to Ohio next week. Kills me. So Larry won't be here, so we'll be about 10% more sober.
Only you.
Those of you who were here last week got to witness Larry kick over the pick over the power stack and shut the podcast down about five minutes from the end.
A little abruptly. A little abruptly.
So good job, Larry. I hope you're having a great weekend, Larry. And we'll see you guys later.
Later, all. Bye.